Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who met his wife while training for the 400 meters in Seattle and is eating gluten-free while lusting after bread, Dave Denniston.
My friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping doctors like you slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. Our next guest, he's a fellow podcaster. He is also a private practice otolaryngologist.
Otolaryngologist, yes.
That's
always a tough one.
I can never get it right. I told my daughter, actually, she might want to think about being an ENT doc. But anyhow, He's really had a heart for physicians and creating a podcast about really helping doctors. How do you do life? And so I'm excited to have him on. A little bit about Brad I thought was fun. He has on his website. He loves to surf, and there is surfing apparently on Long Island. He loves to ski, and there's no skiing on Long Island. He also loves to smoke some meat. Bradley Block, welcome to the show.
Dave, thanks for having me. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
And I had the pleasure of just being on your show, which people are going to have to check out as that episode comes available. So Bradley Block, you live on Long Island.
I do.
I don't hear a New York accent.
No, thankfully I escaped that. I did. I don't know. My brother and I somehow managed to avoid it, even though born and raised, and both of us are back here raising our kids. And hopefully our kids will escape it. And actually, my wife's Swiss. She speaks with an American accent, not New York. You know, anytime we hear one of our kids say something with a Long Island accent, we correct them and correct them and correct them until they get it right.
You know, I had the opportunity last summer to go to Switzerland. Oh my gosh.
Oh.
I loved it. We were up in the mountains and followed a Rick Steves kind of self-guided tour. It was awesome. I'd go back there in a heartbeat.
It's clean and everything is on time.
The trains were so on time. Germany compared to Switzerland was like night and day with the train system.
Yeah, unbelievable. And Germans are known for being organized and on time. But yeah, okay, it's hard to compete with the Swiss on that.
So tell us about you, my friend. What's your background? Where'd you grow up on with Long Island? How did you get into medicine? Give us the story.
So the story isn't really that scintillating. Yes, I did grow up on Long Island, and being an Eastern European Jew, I saw there weren't that many examples of Jews in medicine, so I thought I would forge a new path. I'm just kidding. I am in fact Jewish, but it comes down to the fact that I didn't have a plan. Like I was, you know, I did well in school. I was good at science, and everybody was going on these internships and were really like knew where they were going in life, and I didn't have a stinking clue. And so medicine gave me a path. So it seemed like a good idea. Like, oh yeah, I'll become a doctor. I didn't start off as pre-med and I didn't have a better plan. It wasn't just that, but it was just like, I wanted also, it would mean I would have a meaningful occupation. And so I would have a path and a meaningful occupation, and it's something, and I was good at science. So those three fit together to med school. And so that's how I ended up. Not some incredibly engaging and inspiring story.
What did your folks do?
My mom's a high school art teacher and my dad's an accountant.
So why medicine then? Like what drew you to medicine in particular?
Those were my choices. Like when you grow up a Jewish kid on Long Island, it's investment banker, accountant, doctor or lawyer. Those are it. That's it. Those are the choices. So I picked one. It was a multiple choice test. As a doctor, I'm really good at multiple choice tests. I picked one and there it was. It wasn't like I saw this world of possibilities. I didn't. You know, I just.
Love it. So you go to your undergrad. Where'd you do med school at?
SUNY Buffalo. So New York State School, Buffalo. Yeah.
So not too crazy far away from home. You stayed in New York.
Yeah, that's an 8-hour drive away. So the complete other side of New York. It wasn't that close.
So walk me through, like, you're growing up on Long Island, your Jewish parents having regular jobs. They weren't bankers or doctors from the sound of it. But what kind of lessons were you learning about money as you were growing up?
Not much. Considering my dad was an accountant, he would talk to my brother and I about this stuff, but it really, at least for me, fell on deaf ears. Like, I didn't know what an IRA was. I didn't know, you know, a Roth IRA or IRA. I didn't know what these things meant. He would talk to me about it, but I would tune out, as my kids do when I talk to them. So, you know, he tried to educate us on this stuff and being responsibly financially, but I really didn't know anything about money. And then so my parents really helped me out with undergrad. So when I was done, I really didn't have much debt. And then for med school, I had to take out, it was a SUNY school, a New York State school. So I did have some loans from that. And my grandma helped me out some with med school as well, but I still graduated with debt. But as you're taking out money, it's play money. And then when I was a resident, I didn't put anything away into the 401k. Zero. Because the way I saw it, whatever money I'm making now is barely anything. And when I'm done, I'm going to be an attending and I'm going to make a lot more money. And so I'll just save money then. So rather than saving money now, I'm going to spend it all now because there's not much of it and there's going to be more of it coming later. So I'll just save then. So really not the most fiscally responsible individual.
Mm. Did you have credit card debt, or color me more about that?
No. So I really only spent what I earned. I didn't accrue any credit card debt. It didn't get that irresponsible. I just didn't have any savings. Although I did do one thing. Right when I finished residency, I took out a zero APR credit card and I went backpacking across Southeast Asia. And I spent just 6 weeks between residency and attending, backpacking around Southeast Asia, spending money I didn't have. Because I knew I would be starting in as attending. And also because I moved to New York, I didn't find an apartment. So I lived with my parents for a little while. So I moved in, was making an attending income and having no rent. So I was able to pay down that debt really quickly. That was a calculated decision. It was basically an interest-free loan.
So where'd you go? Tell us about the trip. We're in Southeast Asia. Tell us the story.
So, at this point, it was like 12 years ago, so it's hard to remember. But I flew into Bali and then, you know, spent some time backpacking around Indonesia, went from Indonesia to Malaysia, Malaysia to Singapore, and then flew back home out of Singapore. And, you know, a couple of the highlights, there's this city called Yogyakarta, which is in Indonesia, which is very, you know, it's an old city. It's a really interesting city with real interesting architecture and, you know, a lot of interesting culture. I went surfing in this town called Pangandaran, which there was like nobody there. There was nobody there. And there were these really clean, great waves. Bali was packed. Bali to me seemed like the Cancun of Indonesia. It was just full of tourists and like super saturated. But you get out into some of these lesser traveled spots and it was really quite an amazing place. And then Malaysia was fantastic as well. I went scuba diving and this in an island there that whose name is, again, so long ago, the name escapes me. And, you know, the food was amazing. There was so much ethnic diversity in Malaysia as well, which really surprised me. Like lots of different representation of different parts of the world. A very easy to navigate as well. It was a great time. It did get lonely though. You know, I spent some time backpacking when I was younger and, you know, I was in my early 20s. I don't know, somehow I was able to connect more with people then. Backpacking by myself in my now early 30s was a little lonelier.
So ENT, you had residency and then fellowship for that?
I did not do a fellowship. I didn't. I'm a general ENT.
So five year?
5 years. Yeah, good memory. Yeah, 5 years.
5 year residency. So you're like you said, you're in your early 30s by the time you're done. And I'm sure you're looking around at friends that you graduated college with, and other people are driving nice cars and having houses and all this stuff. How are you dealing with that?
So poorly. So two of my closest friends are orthopedic surgeons. One's a hand surgeon, the other one's a spine surgeon. And they both convinced me to get like an attending car. Prior to this, what I was driving was a 2001 Pontiac Trans Am convertible.
Nice.
It was not the most practical car around. It had an awful turning radius, rear wheel drive, an awful mileage. It was about 2 inches off the ground. So if there was any snow, it couldn't handle anything. And so I moved back to New York where it snowed, or at least It used to snow. I don't know if it's going to snow anymore, but that's a conversation for a different day. So I needed to replace it once the winter came. And so my friends convinced me to buy it. So I got this Infiniti Coupe. The problem is, you mentioned the surfing. You can't put a surf rack on that car. It doesn't, you can't put like the roof rails. There are no roof rails on a coupe. I didn't know that at the time. So here I am with this car that I really don't need. And it, again, hedonic adaptation. This fancy car is not making me any happier. Actually, the Firebird made me really happy because I just thought it was so corny and cool that I drove a Firebird. Some might think it was not so corny and cool, but I did. And so, you know, practically speaking, I should have gotten a more reasonable economic car so I could have saved more and or not necessarily saved more, just spent on stuff that was going to make me happy, like surfing. So I had to buy a new surfboard that was actually short enough to fit inside the car with me, which also meant that when I eventually met my, you know, she's now my wife, my girlfriend, she couldn't come in the car. Like, it was just, if she wanted to come to the beach with me, no, there's no room for you. It's just the surfboard. I'm sorry. So that was, it was completely impractical. It was a terrible decision. Yeah.
So you get into practice. Were you a private practice? Were you in a hospital? You know, what, did you hang a shingle out? What did you do?
So it's going to sound like I'm proselytizing now because I'm totally drinking the Kool-Aid of my practice. So I joined the practice called ENT and Allergy Associates. I joined it right out of residency, and it's been my practice since. It is the biggest ENT and allergy practice in the country. We have 250 physicians. It is a clear path to full equity partnership, which means everyone who joins the practice is told beforehand what you need to do to make partner. And if you make partner, you will have just as much equity as the founders. You will just have just as much equity as me. And so when I found out about the practice and learned about it, I thought, who would join any other type? Why would you join anyone else other than our practice? And so I've been at the practice ever since, and I love it. I think we are the beacon of hope for what private practice can be.
Why do you say that?
Because we're physician run. We're physician owned and physician run. And so we have, because we're so big, we have leverage. We have leverage with insurance companies. We have leverage with like purchasing. And we also have leverage with management. So we can hire people that are top notch to make sure that our practice is being run appropriately. We don't have to get involved in the day to day. I can if I want. So I've been on a number of committees in the practice. Those committees then advise the board. The board is elected. They're physicians who run the practice. And then we have a C-suite of non-physicians who really run the day-to-day of the practice. And for the most part, we follow their lead. But at the end of the day, they're employed. They answer to the physician owners. So the board, because they're all seeing patients same as me, are never going to do anything or change anything that's going to make their lives worse. So it's not all about the bottom line. It's really all about quality of life. The bottom line definitely makes a difference, but like they're not going to do something that's going to make us a little more money, but make their lives a lot harder. Whereas if you're employed, why would the hospital not do that? Why would they not do something that makes your life just not hard enough to leave, but that's going to make them a little more money? So they kind of nickel and dime you. Why would we do this to ourselves?
Love it. So you start out probably getting paid a little bit less, obviously, than some of the partners and other opportunities. How are you thinking about buying a house, paying off your student debt, maybe starting to save for retirement, you know, paying off that car that you got, buying a new surfboard? How are you grappling with all of these decisions coming into practicing that so many physicians are like, just go by the seat of their pants, you know, and kind of get what they want?
That's what I did. I had a couple of surfboards, I had a couple of boogie boards. I had this fancy car. One of my friends from residency says the suburbs is where youth goes to die. So I was not living on Long Island. I was living in Manhattan. So I was renting a one-bedroom apartment in Manhattan. So, you know, saving for retirement? No, I had this fancy car. I had a one-bedroom apartment in Manhattan. I was maybe saving a little bit. I was paying down. Well, the car was leased. Yes, the car was leased. I did pay down my student loans very aggressively. And certainly I paid down that credit card debt, that zero APR credit card debt, very aggressively. So, you know, I didn't have any of the consumer debt that you talk about, right? That, as opposed to like leverage debt, right, for investments. So I didn't really have any consumer debt. My savings wasn't great. I was really spending. I was like a pig in poop. I finally had money after all this time training. I finally had money and I was spending it and it was awesome. But no, I was not responsible about things until later on. Like eventually, I think it was the following year, I met my wife. After a few, actually not that long, we ended up moving in together. And this is also when I discovered podcasts, because my commute was so long from New York City to Long Island that, you know, it in the rest of the country would take me like, you know, 20 minutes to drive. But in New York, it's like 45 minutes in either direction because traffic is always so terrible. So this is when I discovered podcasts and started learning about things like financially being fiscally responsible.
Was there a point that happened? I find that with a lot of people, like something happened in their life. You know, maybe they like were looking at their cash one day and it was like, I got nothing to my name. Or maybe they went through something horrible, or maybe, you know, just the spouse took them to task and was like, we can't do this anymore. What was that for you that turned that around, if anything, that you can point to?
No, there was no epiphany moment. I was just actually, it might have been, okay, maybe. So on our honeymoon, one of the books that I read was Ramit Sethi, I Will Teach You to Be Rich, which it's a short book. It's a simple book. If you, you know, want to start taking a deeper dive or not a shallow dive into personal finance, this was great. And I just blew through it and it really opened my eyes to, you know, what I should be doing to be more responsible with my money and saving for the future. So that was just, it was not really an epiphany, but it was just a first step in that direction. And then I started learning more from listening to podcasts like yours, which was really helpful because it's for me, podcasts were just a really easy way to consume that type of information, especially since I had such a long commute. And having finished residency where every moment is precious, I was suddenly in the car for an hour and a half a day. So to have that time just being pissed away didn't work for me. I needed to do something. I needed to learn. And so that some of the material that I consumed, and actually that was the inspiration for me starting my own podcast, because I was looking, I'm just going to take the time to plug my show right now, because that was me. I was looking for a show that didn't exist, which is just a general personal and professional development podcast for physicians. Certainly they exist now. I've got lots of competition out there, but 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when I was looking, there weren't many out there that were general personal and professional development and also towards patient-doctor communication, because I was looking to improve my ability to connect with my patients and make sure that they were finding the visits fulfilling. I was getting the information I need. I was communicating with them appropriately. So not wasting time on that commute was ultimately my inspiration for starting my own podcast.
And now for a commercial break. Every year, about this time of the year, I have physicians asking me, Dave, I hate the taxes I'm paying. How can I lower my taxes? How can I understand what the heck is going on here? Well, that's why we have put together a tax cheat sheet that really has almost everything that you'd ever want to know about taxes. 2-page document, super simple. I put together a few videos to walk you through it. All you have to do to receive this awesome document is tax the word cheat sheet, all one word, CHEATSHEET, to 833-343-2986. If you want to get your copy of the 2023 tax cheat sheet, make sure to text the word, all one word, cheat sheet, CHEATSHEET, to 833-343-2986. Nothing better you can do for yourself than to get educated on taxes. And so, my friends, make sure to download that cheat sheet again. You can text all one word cheat sheet to 833-343-2986. And now, back to the show.
Were there podcasts that you particularly enjoyed that you'd say to other doctors, hey, you need to listen to this podcast. This could help change your life or set you on the right trajectory, or, you know, I really enjoyed this show.
So one of the podcasts that was really inspiring for me was Jordan Harbinger. He is a personal development podcaster. He used to be on this show called The Art of Charm, which was really all about dating. And what he realized was, listen, a lot of the stuff that we're teaching people about dating and communicating, you can translate into other parts of your life. And he really wanted to grow himself beyond this mold of just the dating scene. And he became more of a personal development podcaster. So that's one of the ones that I really enjoyed that inspired me to do the same specifically for physicians. But I wouldn't tell people about it because I feel like that's like a CrossFitter or someone who's doing keto. Like, you can't just do keto. You have to do keto and tell everybody about keto. You can't just do CrossFit. You have to do CrossFit and you have to tell everyone about it. So I didn't want to be one of those people who like listen to podcasts and tells everybody about all the podcasts that they listen to.
That's fun. So you got inspired to create your own podcast. And people can find it, of course, on iTunes, everywhere else, The Physician's Guide to Doctoring with Bradley Block. How did you fit that in? You know, I think people are always curious about, you know, you're a full-time physician, you're married, you have kids yet at this point?
I have three young boys, yes.
Three young boys. So how are you finding time to do the side hustle all of us talk about? You know, have you pulled back on clinical hours at all? Or like, how did that evolve? I'm sure it didn't start that way necessarily, if that's what you're doing, which I don't know. Tell us about that.
So it started after my second son was born. So my first two are 18 months apart. So at this point, we've got a newborn and an 18-month-old. And instead of taking like a lump of paternity leave, I decided to just work 4 days a week instead of working. At the time, I was working like 5.5 days a week. So I would take one full day off during the week. And the thing is, a newborn and an 18-month-old, the 18-month-old is still taking like two naps a day. So it's not like all of my time is occupied. So that was my window to take the time to start podcasting and developing a workflow. And so that's what happened. And initially it was going to be every other week. And then I just so quickly grew in all of the stuff I wanted to do and talk about that it became a once a week, and it continued being once a week. And now actually I've ramped up to twice a week. So it keeps growing.
God bless you. I don't want to do that much work.
And I do it in the evening. So after the kids are in bed, that's when I record. And I really outsource a lot. I do very little of the work myself because I could be seeing patients in that time, right? I shouldn't be editing the show. I should have someone else edit the show because I can see patients and, you know, in that time, earn a significant sum that then can be used to pay other people to do the things that I never learned to do. And they're better at, right? Because this is what they do. This is Nathan is my podcast editor, and he's amazing. He does such a great job. So I'm going to let him do what he does because he does it so well, rather than me try and figure out how to do it and ultimately end up not doing as good a job as him.
Totally. No, that's true. I think one of the hardest thing about side hustles, and I think what people don't understand, like this show we're doing right now, like this isn't some money-making venture for me. If you look at the money I might make on the podcast, at best, it's like break even. I'm not trying to get sponsors actively. Kind of, if someone comes to me, yeah, I'll take them on, you know, not a big deal. But it's relative to other things that I do. This is like a passion project and platform building for me rather than some big money-making venture. How do you look at your podcast in terms of as a business or, you know, side hustle or passion project? How do you look at it?
So after 5 years of podcasting, I'm looking to make a little money off of it. So I've actually hired someone who is helping me recruit more sponsors. We're actually going to be turning the episodes into blog posts there and, you know, other ways, having maybe some sponsored episodes, having people featured on the websites. So other ways of trying to monetize it, because I want to expand on it. I really enjoy it, but I can't have it occupy so much of my time without getting some income in return for it, because I just don't have that bandwidth. So if I'm gonna be seeing half a day of patients fewer a week, That's a lot less in income. I need to be able to justify that with income from the show. So I want to expand the show, but in order to do that, it has to make me a little money.
Totally. Well, and you think about the time you put into this and what you make per hour versus some other things. Like, have you, we mentioned on your show a little bit, which sounds like you might have some experience with it, maybe the private practice investing in surgery centers or other real estate or other things that can help produce residual income for you. Have you explored that at all besides the podcast? What are you doing outside of 401ks and stuff like that now?
So the podcast is to answer the questions that I have. I found podcasting to be a great way to, if I have a question. So my wife and I have been exploring the possibility of short-term rentals for a long time, for like a couple of years now. Now, how did I learn about them? From listening to podcasts, from listening to other people and having people on my show. Now, if I have a question about short-term rentals, what I'll do is I'll get someone who is an expert in short-term rentals on the show, and then I'll ask them the questions and I'll publish the episodes. So that's one of the advantages of the podcast, is I get to have, you know, these free consultations for the questions that I have. So yeah, so we're probably going to be doing a short-term rental. Hopefully we've put so many offers in, had them accepted, and then stuff came up at the last minute. So hopefully it's happening. And then, yeah, that's the same thing, like passive real estate investing. We've had some episodes on that. I haven't pulled the trigger on any of it yet, but certainly I'm learning more about it. So this podcast also has the advantage of networking, where I'm able to explore and find these other possibilities. You know, we've had quite a few episodes on medical expert witness work, so I'm building that practice as well. So, you know, other income streams. So it's not the show itself that's bringing in income, but the show is facilitating a lot of those things indirectly.
Love it. No, I just love what you're doing. It's so cool. If you wanted to direct people saying, hey, you know what, this was an awesome episode on our show, you should check it out. What would you direct people to? Maybe two or three that you really loved.
If you're interested in short-term rentals, there was an episode I did, I think it was a year or two ago, with Avery Carl, who has this business where they help people identify and purchase short-term rentals in a part of the country that I'm not in. So I haven't utilized their services, but certainly she answered a lot of my questions. So, you know, if they're listening to your show, they're interested in financial advice. So that one as well. I did an episode, one of my first shows was with Cherry Chen, who's an internal medicine physician who does multifamily real estate investing. You can listen to her episode. Pranay Parikh, a couple of months ago, I did an episode with him about multifamily real estate investing. They actually have a fund and they cater mostly to physicians, although anyone can certainly invest with them. So those are a couple of financially related episodes that they might have interest in. And one of my favorite episodes that's not related to this finance at all was with BJ Fogg, who is a PhD in psychology. I think it might be social psychology, but he is like the godfather of habit development. He has studied how people form habits and break habits. So I had him on the show to help us give patients good advice on how to be healthier, how to have healthier habits. Because you tell them to lose 20 pounds and just send them on their own, are they going to actually lose 20 pounds? The answer is no. You got to come up with ways for them, plans with them, and what works. And so that was a really, really useful episode for what is a giant hole in our education and training and how to help people live their best life, which is So BJ Fogg, it was two episodes. His book is called Tiny Habits. Oh, and one more episode a couple of months ago was with Jordan Feingold and Sanj Katyal, who both have masters in positive psychology. So they're both physicians. Positive psychology is not just about the lack of disease, the lack of mental health, but trying to live a more flourishing life, a more fulfilling life, living your best life. So the episode, they've had two episodes, and I would encourage the guests to listen to both of them. One of them is called REVAMP, which is an acronym for basically what is wellness, how do you define wellness, and what are the aspects to wellness so that you can be strategic about living your best life. So those are some of my favorite episodes, and I hope you all will check them out.
Love it.
And yours, and your episode, definitely.
And Brad, you know, if you're reflecting back just on your life, you're just like, you know what, here's some things I did well financially, here's some things I think people could learn from me that, you know what, if I could do it over again, maybe I'd do this a little different. Maybe we've touched on some of those already, but what would you point to?
So one is just understanding what hedonic adaptation is. Hedonic adaptation is the fact that you will get used to everything and it will stop bringing you joy. You will get used to all of your stuff. You will even get used to your job in many situations, unless it's an ever-evolving situation. And so, you know, it's important to spend your money in such a way that it does bring you joy and stuff doesn't bring you joy. The things that bring you joy are people and experiences. So doing things that facilitate being able to spend more time with the people you want to spend more time with and spending your money on experiences either with yourself or with those people are really the best ways to spend your money. You know, the car, as we said earlier, that fancy car did not bring me joy. In fact, it made my life harder and it was hard to vacuum because it was always filled with sand. And then, things that I'm doing well now financially is in my practice, we have profit sharing, we have a cash balance plan, and we have a 401k. And so I maximize all of those. So I don't see that money. It's not mine. It's retired Brad's money. And if I saw it and had access to it, I might actually decrease the contributions. I might actually spend it, but I can't spend it if it never hits my bank account. And so I have to trick myself into thinking I have less than I really have and hide it from myself. So the more you can do to automate that type of stuff, so it's not in your account in such a way that you can spend it, so that you don't spend it. So that's one thing that I am doing well now.
Love it. No, those are good things. And I'm curious to know, as we wrap up this for today, Brad, you know, we titled this podcast, The Freedom Formula for Physicians. So if you were to come up with your own freedom formula, what would that be?
It would probably involve some esoteric constants like Planck's constant or, you know, something like that, just to make me sound smarter than I really am. The freedom formula for physicians. So I think, you know, we have a lot of physicians that are employed out there, and I'm not one of them. But in that particular situation, it's really hard to feel free. So I think the answer to that is not, you know, quit your job and put up your own shingle, but rather find the things that you really enjoy about your job and focus on those and try to find the things that you really don't and try and find ways to do less of that. I'm the last person to ask about financial freedom. I'm not on my way towards, financial independence, retire early. You shouldn't be asking me about that. But just trying to spend your money in such a way, in such a thoughtful way, being mindful about how you spend your time and spend your money, and sometimes realizing that you have more control over things than you really realize, because as physicians, we are a very hot commodity. I don't know if that's the best way to put it, but like your job to replace you would cost them a ton of money. So if there's something in your job that is really causing you mental anguish, find a way to remedy that, or even working towards finding a way to remedy that might be helpful. You know, the action of saying like, this thing that's happening to the doctors in my hospital system is really awful. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to spend some of my time and energy in trying to remedy that. Now, it's easy for me to say from the outside because I'm not in that situation. So the other thing to do would be to quit and join my practice. So do that too.
Love it. Love it, man. Well, hey, where can people find you? Where can they find the podcast? How can they reach out?
Wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. So just look up Physician's Guide to Doctoring or look up Bradley Block or Bradley B. Block, middle initials also be. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Physician's Guide. And I'm LinkedIn as Bradley B. Block.
Love it. Any closing thoughts you want to leave with us?
This has been a fun interview. And I just want to thank you for all the work that you do to give back to the House of Medicine. So thank you.
It's my honor. It's my pleasure. Well, my friends, that wraps up another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle.
Well, thank you, my friends, so much for listening to the last podcast. I am pleased to announce that I am now a completely independent financial advisor, where to the point now I can really integrate my financial planning practice with this podcast. If you might be looking for help, if you have found any of our information here interesting or relevant and you're looking for a second opinion, I'm making myself available for 30-minute strategy sessions. And if you want to arrange a time to meet with me to discuss your situation and see if we might be a good fit for one another, I'd like you to call our office and speak with Kyla. Our phone number is 612-284-2409. Again, that's 612-284-2409. And I look forward to helping you with your financial situation. And now for some lovely legal disclosures required by our lawyer friends. Investment advice is only offered in jurisdictions where Centurion Financial Strategies, LLC, Centurion is appropriately registered or exempt from registration. Our Form ADV Part 2 brochure can be obtained free of charge at advisorinfo.sec.gov by searching for our firm name or its unique CRD number, which is 316-454. This podcast is not a solicitation to provide advisory services in any jurisdiction in which we are not appropriately registered or excluded. The information, statements, and opinions contained in this podcast have been obtained from or are based on information obtained from sources which we believe to be reliable, but we do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of such information. This podcast is intended for informational purposes only and should not be construed as personalized investment, tax, or legal advice. Opinions expressed by any guest are their own opinions and do not necessarily reflect the firm's views. You should carefully consider your own financial circumstances and needs prior to making any investment in securities or purchasing any insurance products. As always, past performance is not indicative of future results. Investing in securities or really anything else involves the risk of loss. If by some chance in this particular podcast I mentioned insurance products are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of an issuing insurance company. They may be subject to restrictions, limitations, and early withdrawal fees, which vary by issuer. You should always consider the charges, risks, expenses, and investment objective of any insurance products before entering a contract. And that, my friends, wraps it up. Wish you all the best. Feel free to contact us with any info at www.daviddeniston.com. Thank you so much and have a good one. Bye-bye.